In Juneau, I'm Pablo Peña with your local and statewide news update. 6 months ago, as the COVID-19 pandemic began, the Department of Corrections suspended outside visits to state facilities to reduce the risk of exposure. That means friends, family, outside volunteers, and educators have not gone back since March. The department says it's found ways to offer limited programming and workarounds to maintain some access for inmates. But as KTOO's Adeline Baxter reports, inmates and advocates say it's not enough.
Right now at Lemon Creek Correctional Center in Juneau, inmates are basically locked down in their housing units, or MODs, 23 hours a day. They get out for an hour of recreation, but otherwise they eat, sleep, and live with the same group of men or women. Inmates say that's created a tense situation with no classes or family visits to break up the time.
It's crazy that all that got, basically all of it got taken away, like during a time like this where there's so much uncertainty and stress, like it's just a really bad environment.
That's Ty Walker Davis. He's been at Lemon Creek for a year awaiting trial, but it keeps getting pushed back. Germs spread quickly inside prisons or jails. So when coronavirus arrived in Alaska, the Department of Corrections suspended all visitation indefinitely. But department spokesperson Sarah Gallagher says they've found ways to offer limited education and treatment programming.
Several of our institutions are able to offer self-study curriculum and increased access to programming delivered through a closed-circuit television. That is something new that is not available in all of the institutions.
Some religious services are also being offered on TV. Gallagher said for drug and alcohol addiction treatment, some one-on-one and small group sessions are happening when possible, and mental health staff are checking in with inmates more often.
That's not perfect, but like everyone, they're kind of receiving modified education at the moment.
But many of the inmates interviewed for this story say those things aren't happening at Lemon Creek, and it doesn't feel like a real effort is being made to provide anything close to the programming they had before. Jeremy Simile says he was taking anger management and a parenting class before the pandemic began.
If I don't take the parenting class, then it affects my classification and whether I can go out on furlough or parole. The class is a booklet. You can take the booklet and do it yourself as like a correspondence study. However, of course, there's no booklets.
Besides affecting his release date, Simile said he's worried about what the lack of programming will mean for him and others when they do eventually get out.
If I take the classes that I'm supposed to take and I behave myself, I could be out in the community and reintegrating within a year. So we have a right to this stuff. It's not something that we're like, hey, it would be better if you gave it to us. It's like, hey, you're supposed to provide it and you're not.
Simile is right about programming. Inmates in Alaska have a right to rehabilitation that's been upheld by the Alaska Supreme Court several times. Megan Edge is the communications coordinator for the American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska. She says they've been pressuring DOC since the pandemic began for more information about what programs are being offered and when families can visit again.
When I think of programming, I think of everything from GED certificates to vocational training to mental health services to, you know, any behavioral health service, sex offender treatment, anger management, all of that falls under the umbrella of programming.
National data shows that recidivism rates go down significantly for inmates who have access to post-secondary education and treatment programs. They're more likely to reintegrate back into society and find a job when they get out. Edge says many people are in prison or jail for low-level drug and alcohol charges, and they're not getting the counseling they need right now to learn how to deal with their addictions.
Meanwhile, they're still releasing, and without that programming, they're not going to release any better than they were.
Back inside Lemon Creek Correctional Center, Simile says he feels like the damage is already being done. Inmates and their families have to pay for phone calls, although DOC says every inmate gets 3 free 15-minute phone calls per week. Still, the charges add up just to stay in touch with loved ones. Simile's worried about the impact on his 5-year-old son.
My son, the other day, he said, Dad, do you have brown hair? Do you have black hair? Do you have blonde hair? I said, you don't remember what I look like? He said, no, I can't remember. That's sad.
DOC does not have a timeline for when regular treatment and education programming, in-person religious services, or family visitation will be available again. In Juneau, I'm Adeline Baxter.
And a disclosure, Adeline Baxter previously taught writing as a volunteer at Lemon Creek Correctional Center. President Donald Trump has announced that he'll issue a permit soon that will allow a Canadian-based company to build a proposed 1,600-mile rail line from Alberta to Alaska across the international border. And as KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, backers of the Alberta to Alaska Railway say Trump's announcement will give their proposed project a big boost.
Trump announced his intention to issue a so-called presidential permit for the Alaska to Alberta Railway project in a tweet he posted Friday night. A2A Railway Vice Chair Mead Treadwell says the permit is essential to moving ahead with the project.
A lot of other projects have foundered on just a simple fundamental question: will the President of the United States allow a crossing of the U.S.-Canada border?
Treadwell's a former Lieutenant Governor and U.S. Arctic Research Commission Chair with long experience in business and finance. He said in an interview last month that the presidential permit is the first of many that the A2A Railway intends to apply for.
We're hoping to begin formal permitting, with the environmental impact statement process sometime either late this year or early next.
A2A Railway's proposal is the latest of several Alaska-Canada railways that have been proposed over the years. A2A has been working on its plan for 3 years now to build a rail line that will transport such commodities as potash, sulfur, and a heavy form of petroleum known as bitumen from Canada to ports in Alaska for export overseas. Treadwell says if the $17 billion project ultimately is built over the next 5 to 7 years, it'll be the newest of some two dozen rail lines that cross the international border.
There's, I believe, 23 railroads which now cross the U.S.-Canada border, including the White Pass Railroad from Skagway headed up toward Whitehorse.
If the project goes ahead, the A2A Railway would cross over from the Yukon Territory at the Ladue River Valley east of Tetlin.
It would go through the Ladue River Valley, come and meet the Alaska Highway about where the Taylor Highway meets the Alaska Highway near Tetlin Junction, move up through Tok and Tana Cross and around Dot Lake and come up to connect with the Alaska Railroad.
A2A Railway officials say that connection with the Alaska Railroad would be either at North Pole, where it now ends, or in Delta Junction if a project formerly known as the Northern Rail Extension is built to bring the rail to Delta. A2A has scheduled meetings with communities along the route that would be affected by the project. It held its first earlier this month in Delta. The second will be held tonight in Tok at Fast Eddie's Restaurant. The meeting also will be webcast on the Zoom platform. Information on how to log on is available on the company's website, a2arail.com. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
Southeast Alaska had its big fall storm of the year.
This is more normal than what last year was. Last year definitely had more of a lamb-type fall, and where this one's coming in with a lion.
That's Kimberly Vaughn with the National Weather Service in Juneau. She says windy conditions were recorded all around southeast Alaska over the weekend. Wind gusts topped 68 miles per hour in Sitka, 62 in Heidelberg, and blew over a shed in Craig. Winds only gusted to 34 miles per hour at the largely sheltered downtown Juneau Harbor Sunday afternoon. They topped out at 57 at nearby Skull Island, 37 at Portland Island, and 48 at Little Island. Rainfall was significant, but not unusual. Just over 2 inches were recorded falling Saturday and Sunday at the Juneau Airport. The amount of donations to a fight over an Alaska oil tax ballot initiative has exceeded $17 million. The vast majority were contributed by big oil companies opposed to a tax increase. The Anchorage Daily News reports that the One Alaska group opposing the proposed Fair Share Act reported that it raised more than $16 million. The group has raised more than the initiative's supporters by a ratio of 15 to 1. Vote Yes for Alaska's Fair Share has received $1.1 million in donations. Voters will decide the ballot measure as part of the general election November 3rd. A federal appeals court panel has ruled Alaska Native corporations are not eligible to receive a share of the $8 billion in federal coronavirus relief funding set aside for tribes. The three-judge panel found an Alaska Native corporation cannot qualify as a Native tribe under a 1975 federal law unless it has been federally recognized as one. The judges ruled that no Alaska Native corporations have been recognized as a Native tribe. It was not immediately clear if the decision would be appealed after our messages were left for the U.S. Justice Department. This is KTOO News.